Well, hello again to all of Greater Turdville. This is Turd Ferguson, and this is a TFMR podcast for all of Turdville to enjoy. We welcome back in today the Golden Jackass himself, Jim Willie, who, as always, has a lot to say. Specifically, I wanted to get Jim on the horn here because he wrote a great piece just last week, a public piece, that goes into all of the exciting things that have been happening in the Treasury market, at least since May, but in particular the last couple of weeks. Jim, as you all know, is the editor and publisher of the Hat Trick Letter and the GoldenJackass.com website. His subscription service is fantastic. He is far more accurate than any other macroeconomic, let's call it, forecaster. And he's a good friend of TFMR. So, Jim, thank you very much for coming back into Turdville.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be back. We got some very weird things going on with the Treasury bond market once again.
No question about it, Jim. We saw rates move rather dramatically beginning in May, from almost a double. I think the 10-year Treasury note was down at about 1.5%, and it rallied in interest, but the price declined enough to make the rate go all the way up almost to 3%. So we're getting close. It looks like this bubble is popping, but you know, this, we've been in a bull market here in Treasuries in general for over 30 years. Most recently, though, these last 4 or 5 years after the financial collapse and QE, it has somehow been sustained. What has been keeping the bond market afloat all this time, in your opinion?
Well, two things. It's been the Federal Reserve and their quantitative easing. They call it bond purchase program. I prefer to call it the hyperinflation monetary policy of monetizing bonds. What they're doing is they're printing money and buying bonds and trying to make it sound like it's a good thing. It's just about the most acidic thing you can ever do to a financial system. And what it does is it kills capital. Monetary inflation kills capital. The second thing that's been keeping things up is the interest rate derivatives. You know, notice back from 2008 to the present, we've had a migration from stocks to bonds. You know, you had the big stock decline after Lehman Brothers. And then, you know, very early 2009, everything was moving into bonds. So the stock money moved into bonds. Mm-hmm. And that effect is long gone. That was a legitimate move into bonds that took the interest rates, I don't know exactly, 3.5%, something like that for the 10-year. But that effect is long gone. The entire flight to safety that was fabricated in 2010 and 11, that was done by interest rate swaps. Take a close look at something that hardly anybody ever looks at, but it's public data. It's called the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency. And it shows that in the second half of 2010, Morgan Stanley put on $8.5 trillion worth of interest rate derivatives.
Wow.
Okay, that's not a flight to safety. That's an artificially contrived and fabricated bond rally. There was no actual demand for U.S. Treasury bonds from that entire episode. It took the interest rates from something like 3.25% on the 10-year down to 1.9. And the big news is, wow, we got under 2%. Wow. Look at all this flight to safety. No, it was all crap. It was all interest rate derivatives. And then since 2011, the demand has come 80% of all U.S. government debt issuance, 80% is covered by QE, bond monetization. They print money and buy the bond. And they try to make it sound like it's something really advanced.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's advanced acidic treatment.
It's the advanced stages of the death of everything, frankly, is that's what's advanced about it.
Well, it's a death of capitalism.
Yes.
Advanced inflation kills capital. It's that simple. And economists do not want to tell you that. They're going to stick with their stupid line that it's stimulus.
Yeah. But now we already saw this, I don't want to say disaster, but we saw the disastrous effects of a rise in interest rates And we saw what I mean by the disastrous effects. We saw what happened to JP Morgan's London whale position when interest rates rose in 2012. And they only rose a fraction of what we've seen in the last 120 days. Since this taper talk began in earnest back a little over 4 months ago, 1st of May, what specifically has changed? I mean, what do you see that has caused all this?
Well, we're seeing an acceleration in foreign dumping of treasury bonds. And I'd like to remind people of an absolute crystal clear, ironclad adage, a maxim, a saying: once an asset bubble is pricked, it cannot be held together due to exiting momentum. Mm-hmm. What we've got is a tidal wave of foreign bond sellings that has occurred. In June, they set a record. Take a look at the TIC report, the Treasury Investment Capital Report.
Yep.
Or Treasury International Capital. I can't remember exactly what TIC stands for, but it's for the U.S. dollar-based bonds and the net change month over month. In June, they set a record, $45 billion net exodus. We're talking about very big numbers here. We're talking about Brazil losing 12% on their treasury bonds. Switzerland dumping $12 billion on their treasury bonds. Switzerland losing $12.5 billion on their treasury bonds. Singapore $9.5 billion treasury bond. Canada, little Canada, $8.5 billion.
Jim, I'll just jump in for a second. I'm going to add. I've got that chart for the Zero Hedge published, showing that graphically. How there's only this mystery buyer X who is the only buyer. We know who mystery buyer X is. It's the Fed. But anybody listening can look at that chart and see what Jim's talking about. Go ahead, Jim.
So, at the same time, another very interesting and horribly negative factor kicked in. It's called indirect exchange. I didn't know it had a name. But just imagine all the Chinese and Russian acquisitions, deals cut, mines purchased, energy deposits purchased, big stakes in, say, the TNK British Petroleum energy company acquisition. The Russians bought out the British Petroleum interest. All these different things are being paid for by these foreign entities in treasury bonds. So the buyer uses treasury bonds as currency, and the seller takes the treasury bonds and sends them back to New York and London to be redeemed. It's called indirect exchange, and it is accelerating.
I would imagine.
So we got a grand – I had an article a couple months ago. I called it U.S. Treasury Bonds Return to Sender. I like to have zippy titles, but this we're getting a return to sender phenomenon that U.S. and London banks cannot refuse. And you might think, well, yeah, the U.S. can't refuse it because it's U.S. Treasury Bond, but why can't London refuse it? Because they own us. The U.S. Fed must sop up all this additional volume exactly when they wish to reduce it. So they talk about taper when instead you're getting all this foreign selling and you're getting all this indirect exchange. So I have a forecast. It's the QE volume. I call it QE to infinity. I started calling it that when it was pretty clear we're going to get QE2, and I saw no reason why it wouldn't go on forever. Ad nauseum, ad infinitum. We're going to see the QE volume double in the next year. It's hard to verify, but I think something has broken, and I think it's the interest rate derivative structure. You mentioned that we had this I don't know what exactly, it was 60 basis point move a year ago in the London losses were declared. Yep. Notice the London whale story was a lie from the beginning. JP Morgan said we lost $2 billion or $1.9 billion, and we lost it from Southern European sovereign bonds and derivatives related to them. Well, take a look at the 90 days before, and you see that all of those bonds improved in value.
Right, I remember that.
What was wrong? We had a 60 basis point rise from, I think it was about 1.8 or 1.7 to about 2.3%. Suddenly, in just a couple months. Mm-hmm. Now we've got 130 basis point move in 4 months, and I think it broke the interest rate derivatives. So the mechanism might be screwed up, pushed off track. It's no longer effective. Furthermore, we got some new strange capital requirement rules possibly being enforced on the U.S. Fed itself. You know, their owners must be really angry at a toxic $3 trillion balance sheet. Gosh, I know they want to be masters of the world, but do they want to be garbage collectors too? This buyer of last resort concept and role has consequences when there's no recovery. In the past, they were buyers of last resort, but then we got an improvement of the in the economy, and they could dump all their, not toxic, but lousy, perhaps impaired bonds. I'm talking about the 1980 cycle and the early 1990 cycle, where we came out of recessions. Why did we come out of recessions then and not now? Because we didn't give away our industrial base to China. This low-cost solution problem in 1999, you know, executed in 2001, 2003, most favored nation status given to China, industrial base moved to China. I'm not talking about the whole thing. I'm talking about the gut of it, the core of it. What's different now? We don't have the industrial base core in the United States economy anymore. We don't have the potential for a recovery from capital investment, CapEx. No. Who cares if we got a cheap interest rate? We don't have a base anymore. We don't have any corporate executives coming in and say, yes, we want to open up a plant in Alabama or Illinois or Indiana or Texas or California or Idaho. No. They say we want to open it up in Shanghai. They want to open up in Taiwan. They want to open up in Hong Kong. No, we don't have the traction anymore. So I believe it's possible, based on some insider stuff. And this is not from my main guy, The Voice. It's not from my other guy, the military and security agency fellow. This is from just a friend in Toronto who said, Jim, I got this from a very reliable source, a guy who has a friend who's inside the Dallas Fed. So That's the next thing going on here, Turd. It's the flash trading. I think it's moved from stocks to bonds.
Well, let's talk about that for a second, because you had mentioned that to me as well. I remember seeing you kind of being copied in with some emails back on, I don't know, it was the 4th or 5th of September. It was in the evening that day. I want to say it was the 5th. I think I remember it being a Thursday. And it was at that point, people were even on my site watching the 10-year trade tick by tick that evening and putting on that it was now 2.995. Oh, now it's 2.997. Now it's 2.998. And it seemed as if everything was really coming to a head and there was a lot of stress in the system. As you look back now, that was the low in price of the 10-year. It has done nothing but rally since. And I'm going to include a chart with this podcast so everyone can see what I'm talking about. It's 10 years rallied, I don't know, 5 or 6 points. I think we've gone from 2.99 to, I don't know, what, about 2.6 something now today. There was this note that was circulated that night about some emergency meetings that were taking place within the Fed. And it led to what this conclusion that you've drawn about flash trading that has now hit the U.S. Treasuries. That's what you wrote about last week. Can you just kind of expand on that a little further and add some more color to that, Jim?
Well, let's get to what it was. Apparently, there was a fellow who had an old banking friend who worked as an executive officer of the regulatory division at the Dallas Fed. So that's okay. The source.
All right.
And he said that on Thursday afternoon, September 5th, so your recollection is correct, there was an emergency teleconference on the U.S. Treasury yields. It went the perilously low capital for the Fed was at issue in the meeting. And the fact that they could no longer afford to defend the U.S. dollar. Well, gee, if they're having trouble defending the dollar, why is that? Foreign dumping of Treasury bonds. Indirect exchange related to dumping from asset sales, perhaps combined with big U.S. banks unwinding their leveraged carry trade.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so all this stuff went going on. And what are these guys doing? Well, let me just read this because it's quite interesting. All the regional Fed Reserve banks were ordered to unload as many treasuries and mortgage-backed securities as they could, even though they were selling at a loss, to provide immediate liquidity even at the expense of capital. Eventually, late Friday night, a tranche of treasuries was sold above market price, below the yield, above the price, below the yield, to several Fed member banks in order to drive down the yield. You can plainly see this on the 10-year treasury chart, unquote. So they had an emergency meeting to bring about sale of treasury bonds among themselves. Just think of 5 or 8 different big investment bankers led by the Fed itself, which is JP Morgan. And they decide, let's drive up the price and bring down the yield because we're getting real close to 3.0%. Mm-hmm. And they didn't want 3.0% because I believe on the other side of 3.0% were a lot of treasury-related options with leverage that would have kicked off and forced in sale, sell stops. So, you know, there's a tip-off of this flash trading. They've got this internal struggle to defend the dollar. I've been talking about the dollar rejection now for a couple of months. It's global. Translated to mean that too many treasury bonds are being dumped. Translated to mean possibly, and this is the kicker, that derivatives may not any longer be functioning. So why would they resort to this flash trading-like concept, strategy within the Fed and the member banks if they've got this powerful interest rate swap derivative with 50-to-1 leverage or 100-to-1 leverage? My answer is because perhaps the derivatives got broken during the taper talk between May 1.65%, look it up, May 1.65 to 2.95 in very early September. You got over 80% of the volume of stock trading coming from algorithm trading,
right.
Flash trading.
Yep.
Algo. They even call it algo trading.
Right.
All right. Now you've got 80% of the federal, I'm sorry, 80% of the U.S. government debt issuance covered by the Fed. Isn't that interesting? 80% for flash trading NYSE volume. Now 80% of the Fed of the U.S. government coverage by the Fed.
Right.
So it's the same percentage. So what's happened to stocks, I believe, is now moving into the bond arena, a natural progression, because they're both bubbles. They're both grand asset bubbles. The U.S. bond market and the bond asset, the treasury bond, it's the largest asset bubble in human history. I don't mean recent history. I mean in several thousand years of history. And it's all coming to a head now. That's why we're getting this tremendous paradigm shift in power structure, geopolitical forces. All this stuff is changing along with wealth transfer. The eventual outcome of this, I believe, is going to be sovereign bonds just getting out of town and going into gold bullion. The bigger climax will be the conversion with the BRICS banks, the emerging market nations.
Right.
Converting their treasury bonds, their euro bonds, their UK gilts, and their Japanese government bonds, converting them all into gold. Not all at once, but in a general tidal wave that will not stop until we've got a whole new gold trade standard in place.
If they can get it, I would advise them to do that as quickly as possible before the world figures out that there's not nearly the gold that they would, you know, the powers that be would have you believe.
Well, here's the rub, though, Turd. As soon as they start selling the treasury bonds, their own internal systems tear apart. Yeah. So you want them to do it quickly, and they see that doing it at all destroys their own home systems.
Yep.
So that's why there has to be a coordinated global move to do it simultaneously so that instead of all these individual nations suffering a sudden implosion and destruction, they suddenly are in control.
Yes.
And all the other, I call it critical mass, let them form a critical mass. Then the other nations are outside looking in with these paper currencies that get devalued.
So
I'm talking about the United States – in the United Kingdom, Britain, England, London, West, and parts of Western Europe.
Yep. So they sit and wait and then all act at once at the same time. That makes all the sense in the world. I want to just go back just to wrapping up this turnaround in the market. in the Treasury market that night of the 5th of September. So what you're saying happened is that these Fed banks got together and purposefully, in a sense, overbid the market, said, we're not going to take the market price. We're going to go up a certain level above where the market currently is, so that we can purposefully turn it, by turning it, begin to generate some momentum back to the upside of the bond market, and let this HFT kind of run then its course by driving the market, even without fundamentals, just driving it in a certain way with the momentum.
That's exactly it.
All right. So please talk, getting back then to the functionality of this. Flash trading is this computer generated high frequency trading, HFT, spec algo, whopper, whatever you want to call it. It now dominates everything from stocks, clearly dominates the metals. It's a joke how badly it dominates the metals. And now it's in the, as you're saying, it's in the bond market as well. Can you explain it, I guess, in your words to everybody, how it works and what the significance of it is?
Sure. It's hard to know the exact details, but I've been reading bits and pieces of it for the last 2 years. I'll try to explain it as best I can. Imagine that there are 30 key stocks. I'll start with stocks. There are 30 key stocks that have high volume, and they're the core elements of the S&P 500 stock index. Imagine now 5 or 6 Wall Street banks, big investment banks, working in collusion to pick, and let's just pick for argument's sake, 2 big components like IBM and JP Morgan.
Okay.
You got an industrial and you got a finance. They bid up IBM and JPM in tiny increments every fraction of a second. I'm not talking about every 10 minutes. I'm talking about every half second. The changeover that took place, I don't know exactly when it was, 15 years ago, they moved from the 1/4, 1/8, 1/16 nonsense to decimals.
Right.
Oh, that's so perfect for algorithm trading. They love it because they can just bid up by 1 penny. All right, so you got all these different banks and 2 main stocks, as an example, and one buys from the other and sells to another and sells to another and sells to another, and with 6 steps, they go up 6 pennies. And it makes it look like it's rising in price, but more importantly, it shows volume. 80% of the volume of the New York Stock Exchange has been for months and months and months and months from algorithm flash trading. HFT, you referred, is high frequency trading.
Right.
So now it appears IBM and JPM have brisk trade and price moving up. The general market might occasionally take down these 2 stocks by some tiny amount, but then the 5, 6 Wall Street banks step in and repeat the process and do it all over again. A penny here, a penny there, a penny there, a penny there. And then you get more volume that shows. And it looks like, gee, it might have gone down some, but now it's going right back up. This is a strong stock. This is how they just create the impressions.
Right.
It's not clear that this amount of flash trading has reduced at all. In fact, in the last several months, we're getting open mention, open discussion by Treasury Department officials and the Treasury Secretary that the Working Group for Financial Markets, aka the Plunge Protection Team, that their activity has increased. And now I believe that they have become the dominant intervention force in the stock market. It's never been greater. The U.S. government realizes, Turd, I mean, it's kind of simple, that if the values of the stock mutual funds, we're talking about savings funds and pension funds and IRA and all that stuff, they must be kept high in order to prevent the masses of the U.S. population from turning alarmed. I got a call in March of 2009 from my younger sister. It's the only time in my lifetime she has ever called, so she's kind of an extreme litmus test. She was worried about her IRA. What should I do? And I said, well, close your account, pay the taxes, open a gold money account, send them your money, and buy 90% silver. She said, I can't do any of them. And I said, well, that's what I said before I gave you the advice. I'm going to give you 3 points of advice, and you're not going to like any of the 3. So we will not discuss this ever again. And we have not. So what the flash trading is a hot potato. Some call it musical chairs.
Yeah.
Well, I call it a hot potato because the hot potato can fall, and the musical chair, you end up not finding a seat. Well, that's fine, but I like hot potato better. when you get these algorithm trading accidents, and we had one a few weeks ago, it's from not enough sheep. residing in the arena, bringing their dumb money. Wall Street calls it paper. We got paper coming in. That means dumb money from the stupid fools who believe that there's money to be made in the stock market. No, what the accidents occur when you get an absence of the sheep. So what I believe has happened now is the migration from stocks to bonds. We now have the mechanisms in place with high frequency, with the plunge protection team, and key financial stocks regularly purchased by the Fed in order to keep the financial sector looking good.
Right.
That migration has now moved to treasury bonds because I believe the interest rate derivatives have been broken. And we're going to hear about it in the next few months with another London whale story or five London whale stories.
Yeah.
We're also getting this foreign indirect exchange. The foreign entities are dumping. But, you know, it brings up another really great point, though, Turd. It's not just foreign selling. It's not just indirect sale exchange from foreigners buying assets and using treasuries as currency. We got a bond carry trade that they boasted about all through 2010 and 11 as making really easy money profits for the big banks to replenish their balance sheet. This is the bond carry trade.